In the past, our view of the world was influenced by artists. The way Picasso painted, the way Warhol talked about capitalism, consumerism, those changed how we saw the world. Now, tech billionaires, namely Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk, control powerful algorithms that influence how we see the world. They influence what we see, and they influence what we don't see, how much of it we see.
Says Mike Winkelmann, also known as Beeple, who I met for a new episode of our Weltkunst podcast, Was macht die Kunst? And who has brought with him some regular animals into Berlin's Neue Nationalgalerie, whose partner Volkswagen Group Culture is also the sponsor of this podcast. Beeple is a digital artist, a graphic designer, a director and programmer, and I'm very curious to hear his answer to our regular opening question, what is art up to?
What is art up to? That is a great question. I think art is up to a lot of different things all over the world. But I personally believe the thing that art is not up to is talking enough about how technology is impacting our lives. I think that, to me, is the most pressing conversation of our times, and I would love to see more people talking about that versus other things that might be concerns but maybe are not as universal as this sort of like concern.
I can imagine that you are the one person in art history that has gotten people to talk about technology in the arts maybe more than anyone before. I'm thinking specifically 5 years ago when one of your works, or actually it's a compilation of thousands of works, your NFT Every Days, the first 5,000 days, sold at Christie's for almost $70 million. So before we dive into the work that will be shown in Berlin now and into your other works, this was really an impact in the art world. I remember, I have to admit, I didn't know your name before that. I had never heard of Beeple. And then I thought, what? $69 million for an NFT? That really,
I say? It got some people's attention.
Yeah.
It got some people's attention.
Yeah. What kind of work was that for people who haven't seen parts of it or the whole thing?
Sure. So that was a compilation of 5,000 images that were created over 5,000 days, called the Every Days series, a series that I started in 2007, where I do a picture from start to finish each day. I'm still doing this. I still have to do it sometime today. I have to figure out some time here. And it has to be posted somewhere online before midnight. And that's always been the sort of like rule of the sort of like project. And in 2021, or late 2020, this crazy new sort of like NFT thing was exploding. And about 2 weeks before Christie's approached me to do this auction, I had just hit 5,000 days of those Every Days. And so the piece is a giant compilation of all of the first 5,000 days. And so you can look at the piece online, but every single image is so small, you can barely even see any of them. And so, it's kind of hard a bit to judge that project just looking at that one image.
So it's a compilation of some things that I think you physically drew on paper, and then things that are only digital. Can you describe the process? For example, today is a day in Berlin. Have you made up your mind if you want to do one in ink or in pixels?
Yeah, so almost all of them, besides the first year, are digitally sort of like drawn. The first year, the way the Every Day started, I started out doing a picture every day drawing because I wanted to get better at drawing. And I had saw an illustrator out of the UK named Tom Judd who did a sketch a day for a year. And I thought, oh, that's a cool way to sort of like, you know, stick with something and improve your craft. And so I started doing that. And then after that year, I realized I learned a lot, still very bad at drawing, but I thought, what if I took this sort of like idea and this practice and applied it to a 3D program, and then I could learn that 3D program. And so most of the, you know, now 19 years are digital, like almost all of them. And so, yeah, today will be a digital piece.
And do you sometimes do a whole series in a day? And
no, they're all that day. They're okay. All done start to finish that day. So yeah, none of them are kind of like banked up and just released that day. Okay. They're all done that day.
And do you do more drawings a day and you pick one of them for that day? Or do you just say, I'm doing one drawing and no matter the outcome, this will be it?
Yes. I definitely don't have time to each day to sort of like do a bunch and then choose the best. It's definitely like we put all our eggs in one basket and hope for the best.
And how much time do you calculate for this daily drawing?
It depends on how much time I have that day and how motivated I am and how strong an idea I have. It's usually somewhere between 1 and 2 hours. Today it'll be probably closer to like an hour, depending on sort of like time. But it's always, almost always done at the like end of the day. But it's got to be sort of like posted somewhere before midnight. And that's kind of the methodology.
But that was the right moment, I guess, in 2021 to release that big NFT of the first 5,000 drawings. And I think the first bid was $100. Was it, were you following the auction in the auction room, or was it an online, was that already Corona online auction?
So this was an online auction. And just for kind of like context of like the sort of like setting there, I had learned of NFTs about 4 months before that sale. And so kind of over the last sort of like 20 years, I've been making art since 1999. And so I've been making art for about digital art for about 20 years before that. And I had kind of like amassed a few million followers on social media prior to that sale. And so when I came to the NFT space, like it took a while for people, my followers, to convince me to look at this NFT thing that was already starting to sort of like blow up. And at first it was like, this is some weird crypto thing and has nothing to do with me. And then finally they sort of like convinced me. And then I looked at it and it was like, and it instantly kind of like clicked. And I had a few sales and sort of one of them a few months before that had hit. We basically sold $3.5 million worth of NFTs in a weekend. And that's what caught Christie's attention to be like, wait a second, what's this? Okay, that seems like something we might be interested in too. And so things were like, momentum was building. So this like, you know, this was obviously a huge number, but we'd seen some huge numbers before that. And so the auction was actually over about 2 weeks and it started at $100. And within the first, like, I don't know, 10 minutes or an hour or something like that, it got to $1 million. And so very quickly, it like was at the morning of the auction before like the last few hours or whatever, it was at like $13 million already. So it was already, you know, a pretty massive sum. But then obviously in the last, you know, half hour, it got super wacky.
I mean, that must have been a surreal experience to see a number explode so much.
It still is a surreal experience. It's still like because it was so odd at the time, because it was not just me. Like all of a sudden, all of my friends were making like insane sums of money. And it'd be like, this guy just made like, you know, $1 million. This guy just made $2 million in like a weekend or whatever. And like, so it was like this weird little niche of like art and the very specific kind of art that I create, suddenly all of this energy and like attention was like focused on it and valuing it in a insanely like higher way. But we've been like making this art for like, you know, years or whatever with people appreciating it, but obviously not monetarily appreciating it in that way. And so, yeah, it was just, it was very surreal.
I mean, in a way, it was a surreal time for all of us, not art-wise, but just society-wise, because with COVID, this shutdown of everything, I feel that was probably the right time for this kind of art, because so many things were channeled into digital ways more than before, and the world was just a different place for these years. And now, in retrospect, I always find it strange that we got over it, and it doesn't seem like years. It seems like maybe weeks when I look back, that we had to walk around with masks. And
I know, it doesn't, it's like, wow, that, like, the whole, yeah, I completely agree. I think everybody was in their house. Things accelerated digitally in ways that I think would have taken much, much longer otherwise. And yeah, it's just like very surreal to sort of like look back at that entire time period.
So before, you had been producing art for a long time. When you think back, let's say when you were a kid, when was the first time that you thought art might be a career, or that you considered yourself an artist?
I did not think art was going to be a career. Where I'm from, there's no people who are like artists. Nobody cares about art. There's no museum. Like, nobody. Art is just no part of like anybody's life where I'm from in the United States. It's like a very small town in Wisconsin. We got a computer when I was in like fourth grade, and that was the immediate sort of like, this thing is like the thing. And so at first I wanted to make video games. And so I went to school for computer science, thinking I was going to make video games. And after a few years, I realized I was spending all my time making weird little sort of like digital art on the computer. And I was like, okay, that's actually what I probably want to do. So I'm just going to get through the degree and then get a job doing web design and then just put all of my energy into making this sort of like art on the side. But there was like no part of me ever thought I would make money off of it, because there was just nobody was paying for this. It was so weird and kind of like out of the, like, you know, sort of like mainstream that was just not even any part of a good story. Honestly, even, you know, months before learning of NFTs, the idea of making money from making a living at all from a collector buying your work, I didn't know anybody who was doing that. Like, that was, every single person I knew made money from freelance work. Nobody was like making money as a sort of a collector. And again, I, like, at that time, I was being flown all over the world to do talks at conferences and stuff, and working with Louis Vuitton and sort of Sony and you know, SpaceX and Apple and all these like companies and stuff. And so I was like, okay, this is as good as it gets. Like, I don't, what else could there be? And so, yeah, unbeknownst to me, there was this whole other sort of like world of kind of, you know, capital A sort of like art, that just was completely connected from what was happening digitally, you know, what was happening on the internet at the time. And so, yeah, NFTs were kind of that bridge to have people look at art, digital art, in a more serious way in terms of kind of like the value and sort of like prominence in society, I think.
And how did that huge monetary success of that NFT, how did that affect your creative process, your creative life afterwards?
It made a massive impact, and just the sort of like NFT kind of like concept in general really affected greatly my practice. For the entire time of that 20 years, I was just one person working in a bedroom alone. I was again doing freelance work, but I would never hire people to like do work. Like, I would, you know, I had tons of work sort of like coming in, but I would only do the things that I could just do myself. And so when the freelance thing, or when the NFT thing started to happen, people, this was again so new that people would be like, why would I pay for like nothing? And I was like, that's a fair point, to be honest. So I was like, why don't I just make a physical object that's a better way to sort of experience the art? Because again, we all still live in the like real world, and like having a sort of, they were like little kind of like displays, having a way to sort of like passively view the digital art in your home. It was like, oh, this is really like a cool way. And you also have the NFT and like, you know, and so that actually made me start to make sort of like physical art because of the NFT thing, which I would never even like print out my work before. And so it really sort of like shifted the trajectory of the type of work that I did quite massively. And then obviously having a huge sum of money allowed me to do, you know, artworks that I would never have done before, because it's just like, okay, well, this costs like literally like $1 million to like develop. Like, I'm not going to do that. Like, what are we talking about? And so, yeah, it was a huge, huge impact.
So from then on came installations and more expensive productions that became three-dimensional in the real world too.
Yeah, so during that sale in December 2020, my brother, who is a mechanical engineer and worked at Boeing at the time, was looking to sort of like do something different. And he had kind of like come to me like months before that and been like, oh, dude, I gotta quit my job. Like, this is boring. Like, I don't want to do this anymore. And I was like, okay, I'm a graphic designer. What could I like, I don't, what do you want? Like, and so during that sale, I was like, you should quit your job and we can make like bigger sort of like physical things. And so he immediately quit his job and started like building a team of engineers. And so from there, we started making, you know, bigger sort of like sculptures, these sort of like rotating boxes that have, you know, a bunch of screens and sort of like look like they're kind of like holograms in a way. And a bunch of different things, including obviously the regular animals here. And so we also built out a space in Charleston. The studio is like a 50,000 square foot giant space where we have sort of like huge events a few times a year. And then have kind of like a sort of like gallery kind of like space as well to sort of like show these sort of sculptures and stuff. So yeah, that all that stuff, you know, would not have been possible without obviously this, you know, giant sort of like sale.
And how many people work with you, like in this huge space that you just described in Charleston?
Yeah, it's not a huge team. It's probably about 8 or 9 people that are on the team total. But, you know, the amount of things that we can do now with like AI is just insane. Everybody can program things and sort of like we can find answers to things much, much quicker and sort of like build out websites and things like that. And so, yeah, we're able to work pretty quick.
So before we talk about the regular animals, I would like to know, how do you use AI on a regular basis?
So we use AI at the studio in sort of like many, many different ways. I use AI for the like everydays now because it's such a like powerful tool. And I was kind of using it more and more in the sort of like building of the tool, building of the everydays prior to this year. I would make, you know, use AI to generate an image and then make a little 3D model out of that and then use that in the sort of like scene. And I would sort of do the picture how I would, you know, normally, and then kind of like up-res it using AI to like add a bunch of sort of like little detail. And then this year I was like, okay, let me just see if I just do it completely from sort of like AI, which is actually a lot harder than I was, you know, kind of like anticipating, to be quite honest, because it's very easy to make something with AI. It's very hard, in my opinion, to make something that doesn't suck with AI. But beyond that, we use it for like the programming of the dogs was all done with like AI. Anytime we have to like build again, sort of like websites or like a lot of the sculptures rely on different sort of like software systems. That's all AI. The dogs use AI to sort of like transform the images that they see. And so it really is very, very integral to many sort of like pieces of what we do at the studio.
So let's say you want to make a drawing today using AI. Let's say, what would you, if I was your computer, what would you say? What would the prompt be?
That's a good question. Usually the prompts are a mix of some text and images as well to kind of like help sort of like guide it in the right sort of like path. Usually the prompts are like huge sort of like paragraphs. And then from there, I'll take the image and sort of like, it's a mix of like, you know, AI and sort of like Photoshop. And then I'll sort of like add things or like change things or cut out little pieces of it and then re-put that into AI again and then say, okay, change this little thing here to this other thing. And so it's not really like, you know, sort of like usually just one prompt. It's kind of like that's just a tool to sort of like make an image that otherwise would have been like, you know, not something you could do in a day, because there was many, many types of images that I just could not do because it's a very labor intensive process. And that's why, you know, to be quite honest, a lot of people are sort of like scared of this technology. And I do think it is going to be very disruptive in many sort of like production workflows, because it does speed up or eliminate a huge amount of sort of like labor.
And are you never upset when something looks like your work, but it's done by AI, by somebody else? Like the protection of artistic creation?
No, I don't think, first off, I don't think I have that strong of a like aesthetic that it would immediately be like, that's my thing. But that's not like, I mean, every single thing you see, including the people who are extremely iconic artists, borrowed from other things that they saw. And so thinking that you can like sort of own an entire like style of sort of like work is sort of like, I mean, could nobody paint anything remotely like Picasso after Picasso? Like even he borrowed from like African sort of like things, and like, and so it's like, well, could he have not done that because people in Africa did that? And so it's sort of like everybody is borrowing from other things, and so the idea that you could sort of like own a style, you know what I mean?
I know what you mean. I just think that when, let's say, somebody is referring to Picasso in their work, there's the part of emotion. There's a kind of an emotion in it, and the endless possibilities. I mean, you can tell a computer or you can tell AI to do a million versions or of something, and that a person would never do a million versions of something because it's physically impossible. So I just think it's scary to think that all the creations that have been reached or developed over, you know, hard-fought artistic careers can then be put into a pot and you can disperse them indefinitely without any emotion and any combination with anything else. I'm also curious. I can't say I find AI only terrifying, but I also find it terrifying. I see that there are many good things that could come out of it, but in the arts, I find it, I just can't wrap my head quite around it yet. What will happen? Because when AI takes over, let's say, designers' work, you know, then in the end, I mean, and it's kind of only regurgitating things that have at some point been done by a human being. And then in different combinations and can be regurgitated again and again and again. But when this way, basically, graphic designers or artists die out because they have no more jobs. Eventually, I feel that it feels kind of hollow or empty and more creativity is needed. But maybe we have killed the creative class.
So a couple things there. I agree that it is going to be very disruptive in terms of jobs. That part I am very worried about, to be quite honest, because it automates a lot of things, and it's getting better and better, and design-wise, it's getting better and better quite quickly. And the cost and time between having AI do something and paying somebody to do something is, I mean, you're talking about something that's nearly instant and basically free versus potentially thousands, tens of thousands of dollars. And so that part of it, I'm extremely worried about. In terms of killing sort of like creativity, I think it's actually completely the opposite, because being able to make all of these things, a bazillion images, when you look at most of those images, do you find them to be interesting? No, you don't. So, but if I showed you that exact same image and I told you somebody painted it or made it by hand, you might think, oh, that's interesting. And so I think it's actually massively raised the bar in terms of creativity, because I see things all the time that if I had seen that 5 years ago, I would have been like, oh my God, that's crazy. And I see it now and it's like, that's fine. Like, the bar is actually way higher for something new and novel that I have not seen before, because it's so easy to sort of like make things. And so I think at the end of the day, this is a tool, and I think it is going to be a tool that's used by many people very regularly for all sorts of things. And I look at it, I think there is somewhat of an analogy to photography. Photography used to be very hard to do. You needed specialized things, and you needed to develop your pictures in a Lightroom, and you needed to understand all of this stuff. Now, a kid can take a picture. You just tap your finger, and you took a picture. And everybody takes pictures now. So is photography dead? There are still photographers that are doing interesting work that you look at and makes you stop and be like, okay, wow, that's a really interesting use of this medium. But the medium itself got very, very easy to do. And everybody does it. But everybody doesn't consider themselves a photographer. And I think it will be very similar with sort of like AI. Everybody will use AI to generate images. They'll use it to generate movies for themselves. They'll use it to generate music that maybe just they like and nobody else gives any shit about. Pornography, there you go. Let's get crazy with it. So you'll generate all these things. And like, probably nobody will care about most of the stuff you generate. But some people will do interesting things with these technologies that make you stop and sort of like think. And it will be a small percentage of all the sort of like use cases of that. And so I think it is, to me, both very exciting and inspiring what's possible now, and scary, because I do worry about how good it is getting and how disruptive it will be to people sort of like working. And I wish more people were a little bit more in the middle on it too, because I think most people are either like, this is the death of everything, or this is like the best thing ever and it's going to solve all of our problems. And I don't think it's either of those things, but it's kind of maybe both of those things too.
Okay, that sounds very wise. During the U.S. presidential election of 2020, you created a work called Crossroad, which was actually depending on the outcome of the election. Can you explain this work and how it turned out?
So that was a work that I made in October of 2020, sort of immediately after learning of NFTs. As soon as I learned of NFTs and it kind of like clicked, I started talking to all the sort of like heads of all the like platforms, the collectors, the artists, like trying to like understand the space. And one of the things I sort of like kind of like offhand said was, it'd be interesting to do an NFT where it changed based on the outcome of the election. And the people who ran that platform were like, oh, nobody's ever done something like that. And I was like, really? Thinking it was just kind of like, oh, okay, well, that's doesn't seem like that like crazy of an idea or whatever. And they're like, no, we should do that. And so we did that, but I had to like do it like, you know, a week later because the election was coming like 2 weeks later. And so the person who bought the piece didn't know how it was going to look in the end. And so that's something that NFTs as a sort of like medium allow you to do. They can change over time. And I think that's something that to me is very exciting because a normal sort of like painting or a normal sort of like sculpture, it is what it is. You see it on the wall. It's not going to change. Any sort of like new, you know, sort of like meaning that you derive from it was somewhat unintentional because it was a statement frozen in time. Versus digital art and NFTs have the ability to change and sort of like adapt and react to things that happened and create these sort of like dynamic systems that change. And so that's as a medium, I think it's something that's really exciting. And so that piece was the first, you know, sort of dynamic piece that I did.
Would it be time for another crossroad now for the midterm elections in the U.S.?
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen in the midterms. Maybe the next election would be a good sort of like crosswords, but yeah.
You brought regular animals to Berlin. What is that title refer to? What are regular animals?
So regular animals, the reason it's titled regular animals is because the sculpture, which is these sort of tan, kind of skin-colored looking robot dogs with very realistic sort of like heads, looks very odd. It looks very weird. But I think it will be something that is regular or sort of like normal in the future. And I'm always trying to, with the work that I do, not say how things should be in the future, but say how things could be in the future. And so I think this thing that seems super weird now will be just like a regular thing in the future. And so that's why it's called regular animals.
So it's these robotic dogs, as you explained, and one has a very realistic looking head of Elon Musk. One has the head of Picasso. One has the head of Warhol. Why is it only men?
So that's a good question. I got that question quite a few times. Do you think if I put the head of a woman on a dog in 2026, that would turn out very good for me? Yeah, and there you go. We played the whole movie forward through.
Okay, yeah, okay.
There it is.
Because the English word bitch is also a bitch.
Okay. We played the whole movie out.
But why is it that selection? Why is it especially these famous men?
So the way that the artwork works is that these dogs are walking around autonomously and they are taking pictures and pooping out prints in the style of each of those different characters. And so the Picasso dog takes pictures and then using AI reimagines those pictures in the style of Picasso. So it looks like a cubist sort of like image. And then it has a printer attached to the back of the dog and it squats down and poops out a print. And all of this happens sort of like automatically. The Warhol dog sort of like poops out pictures that look like screen prints from Warhol.
A little bit.
And the analogy there or idea is that in the past, our view of the world was influenced by artists. The way Picasso painted, the way Warhol talked about capitalism, consumerism, those changed how we saw the world. Now, tech billionaires, namely Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk, control powerful algorithms that influence how we see the world. They influence what we see and they influence what we don't see, how much of it we see. And this is an immense amount of unchecked power that does not require them to lobby the UN to change the algorithm. It does not require them to go to Congress and get a law passed to change the algorithm. They just wake up and they could just change the algorithm and hundreds of millions or billions of people would see something different that day. And they would immediately see something different. And so these people have the power to change people's lives in a real, actual way, in a way that most politicians don't actually have that much power. Like if even Trump, if he wants to do something that affects the average American's life, it's actually kind of hard versus Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk could immediately affect a lot of people's lives in terms of like what they see that morning. And so that is kind of the sort of like idea behind the selection of those sort of like characters.
So it's a strong critique of society.
It's not necessarily a sort of like critique because I'm always trying to kind of like ask more questions than give answers with artwork, but it is how it is. Like if you think that is not good, that is definitely what you can come to, a position you can take on that. But this is definitely the way it is.
And for everyone who is going to visit Neue Nationalgalerie, these pictures are free to be taken away.
Yep. There'll be 1,000 prints, 1024 prints made during the course of this exhibition. And so I think roughly every hour they're going to sort of like hand out some prints. Yeah.
So they are on the base level of Neue Nationalgalerie, contained in a square area. And they will be installed tonight. So I'm very curious to see them in action. I saw how they were on the loading dock and they looked creepy already and very interesting. But I'm curious to see that. You're combining programming, AI and robotics in your work. Some of the latest technologies the world is talking about. What are the latest technological developments that you know about that you are also excited about? I mean, now also past AI.
I think robotics is going to be the next thing that I think you're going to see a ChatGPT iPhone type moment with. Because I think we had robotics in the past, but with the combination of AI, where you now have things that can move around and be much more intelligent and understand what they see. I think that is going to very quickly accelerate and be another sort of like, oh my God moment. And so I think that's probably not that far down the line here.
It will be surprising for some audiences to see your work here in a Museum of Modern Art, where side by side with works by Otto Dix or by, we just looked at a Jean Tinguely together. How do you see yourself in the context of the history of the arts of the 20th and 21st century?
I think to me, it's really just a sort of like continuation of those sort of like practices. This work, you know, I see as like a living sculpture. It also combines photography. It combines printmaking. It combines this sort of like generative system to sort of like produce all of these things. And I think it's massively influenced by those things that came before. Obviously, it's producing, you know, Warhol type prints and Picasso type sort of like images as well. And so I think it's just, to me, I see digital art as being just another medium that, you know, eventually will be, you know, seen just the same as sort of like sculpture, photography, or like any of these other things.
Do you collect art?
I don't really collect art, to be quite honest. Many people have told me I need to start collecting art, but I've never collected anything. I've never collected baseball cards or, you know, comic books or shoes or anything. And so I just don't have that mindset. I'm so focused on what can I make that I just don't have the bug. I don't have the gene.
I hear you. But on the other hand, I find you producing a picture every day, that's also kind of a collection. That's almost manic.
It is. I mean, there's not that I don't have my OCDs. I mean, I definitely have that. But it's just like, I don't know. I think what also a part of it is, for the vast majority of my artistic practice, art was not something that you owned. It was just like, because again, I didn't know of like collectors or like, I didn't know anything about this sort of like world. Art was just like ideas that you saw on the internet, and then you put your ideas on the internet and like, that's it. And you were influenced, and like the idea of like owning the ideas were like, well, I don't understand that. And so even today, sometimes the idea of like owning art feels a bit weird to me, because the actual physical object of the art to me is like, it's not really that like important in a way. It's more about the ideas that are embodied in that thing. And the thing itself is just kind of like a vessel for those sort of like ideas. And so, it's still sometimes a bit weird, to be honest.
What will you be looking at when you're in Berlin for another couple of days?
I'm definitely excited to see the rest of the museum. I've actually seen almost none of it because I just got here yesterday and we had a bunch of like press stuff today. So I've not even seen this museum.
If time travel was real, what place and period would you visit?
I would visit as far into the future as I could go.
What's your most important tool?
A computer.
If you were an animal, what would it be?
A sloth. I really like sloths.
Which game do you like to play?
That's a good question. I'm going to say War Robots.
Is that a video game?
It's a video game. It's actually my son's favorite video game at the moment. So I'm going to say War Robots.
Okay, that one's for him. What's your favorite color?
Green.
Do you have a recurring dream?
I used to have a recurring nightmare about missing an everyday. And then technically did not post it before midnight one time. And I've not had that recurring nightmare since.
Do you listen to music while you work?
I listen to music. I listen to like a lot of like electronic music.
Which topic would you like to see in an entire issue of Weltkunst or magazine?
I would like to see the impact of technology on today's society, from social media to AI to phone addiction. I would like to see that, and I think it's a very pressing topic.
Can you share a wisdom?
That's a tough one. One of the things people sort of like ask me a lot about the everydays is like, how do you come up with all these like ideas or whatever? And my saying is that you do not have a lack of ideas, you have a lack of deadlines.
Thank you very, very much. This has been a real pleasure. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.